This is one of the few presentations that Holden, when the audience or you are captive, or else in a way as a community we decided to be here. And I worried about that this afternoon. It put some pressure on me to make this interesting. So to help with that, I made some pictures and charts, or used some old pictures and charts. But for the next half hour, or maybe a few minutes longer, I want to focus together. Ash Wednesday, now our liturgy tonight is really our entrance into the time of Lent. As we walk through a door into a room, so the church has doors through which we pass into seasons of time, and thus is Ash Wednesday tonight. And I'd like to just present a little on the background of what Lent is all about. But as a beginning to focus our minds on it, just pick one other person or a group of three, no more than three, and we'll take about 5 minutes and just share your experience of Lent. You know, what has Lent been to you in your life? You know, has it been nothing? Has it been funny? Is it a bad memory? You know, is it good? Is it pleasant? Have you had a lot of fun during Lent? Just share some of your memories and thoughts from your own life on Lent. Two people or three people, we don't have time for over three in a group. I know you're in the middle, but I'm going to cut. Anyway, we can continue this after Solitude Day. Yeah. Instead of moving on now to the meaning of Lent, I want to move this direction. One little booklet I read about Lent, I think, had the best title that I've ever heard for Lent, and that it exists for the sake of Easter. This little booklet was just called For the Sake of Easter. So to get around to what Lent is, I'm first going to just work a little on what is worship, and then what is Easter worship, and then what is Lent in relation to Easter worship. So that's the outline. And I'll start with the first chart. This is a John Schramm word, to think with. And to talk about the meaning of worship, we really have to move, I think, to a different concept of worship than I think most of us grew up with, and also what makes liturgy so boring. I'll just assume that for most of you that might have been an experience. But the kind of old think with is this, that I go to church to do certain things, praise God, and then hear the word, you know, or hear the sermon, and then receive Holy Communion. And it's all often with this, I go in order to be somehow helped through the week. Almost, it's a kind of a gas station theology of worship. You are, you know, you're filled on Sunday to make it until the next Sunday when you're running out. And this puts tremendous pressure on the preacher. You know, what if my sermon fails and people won't make it through the week? But this has been a common, where the main thing about going to church is really to get something or to receive something that you can take with you. And I want to share now what I've come to see is probably the most ancient understanding of worship that would go back to the earliest days of Christianity. And I was helped on this by a Roman Catholic liturgical scholar. His name is John Gallen. And this is kind of his definition. We gather in awe and wonder, you can't read that, there's a shadow there, but to create a poetic drama and then to be incorporated again into the reality which we symbolize by that drama. Now this new think with is that we would go to the Eucharist on Sunday with the understanding that we are actresses and actors. And we go there almost as artists to paint a picture and to create together a drama. This drama symbolizes something, and then by creating this symbolic drama, we actually become incorporated into that. Okay, next. Stop me anytime on this, but
I feel uncomfortable with that.
Oh, already? I just started.
I think of acting as being something that you aren't. to. Mm-hmm. And so you have all these people trying to put on these roles, and...
Okay, well, follow me through.
Okay.
Or follow this through. I don't want to not let you keep on that, but let me go a little while, and then I'll give you a check. Okay. Let's start. Start with what, if we are gathering together to create a symbol or a drama, it would be a drama of what is the center of our faith, and that's the gospel. And I just tried to summarize that as briefly as I can, that in the life, teaching, crucifixion, and resurrection of Jesus, a new age has begun. We have been baptized into the new age, into the kingdom, the reality which will be complete in the coming day of Shalom. That in the death and resurrection of Jesus, a new age has dawned on the world. In baptism, we are incorporated into that new age, and we wait for the fulfillment of that kingdom. Okay, now the word liturgy means work of the people. In other words, in ancient times, if you were a bricklayer, that was called your liturgy. If you were a carpenter, that was your liturgy. So when the people of God meant to worship, what they did was called their work. And this is what has been done just from the most ancient times. There's really two things happen in the Sunday morning liturgy. First, we gather to tell the story, and then we gather to represent the story in dramatic action, and then God turns our action into his action, or her action. Now, I'll say this in a different way. This is the gospel. Christ came. Christ broke his body in ministry and on the cross. Christ poured out his life for others and poured out his life on the cross. And then his life and his sacrifice calls us to be a new body and to represent the coming Shalom, or the unity of all creation. Now, after we've heard that story, then from ancient times, the church then chooses to act out that story in visual symbols. Okay, as Christ came into the world, bread and wine are brought to the table. As Christ broke his body, the bread is broken. As Christ poured out his life, the wine is poured. And then the action of Christ is symbolized. And then by our eating and drinking, we participate in the telling of the story visually. And then in faith, we say that God comes and makes the story happen all over again in our lives. So week after week after week, we are incorporated into the story by dramatizing, or in a way, painting a picture of the story. Now, I have a way to make this clear. Because we would say, well, doesn't it happen every day that we're incorporated into Christ? And every morning when I get up, I'm incorporated into Christ. Why do we have to get together on Sunday and have this ritual to be incorporated into Christ? And I'd say, true, we are incorporated into Christ, but a community always will ritualize what has deepest meaning for that community. And then by participating in the ritual, that community is incorporated into the symbols. Now, I'll give you a fantastic example. It's the Super Bowl. Now, when I say this, it doesn't mean that a Christian would never watch the Super Bowl or participate in watching the Super Bowl, okay? So don't get me wrong. But next time you do, think of this. It's very interesting. The Sunday National Football League game is kind of the weekly Eucharist, and then the Super Bowl is Easter for our culture. Because if ritual is taking what is most important to you and putting it in visual form, you know, just think what you would see at the Super Bowl. patriotism, the exaltation of power, a certain kind of technology, the idea that winning is everything, women are objects. You know what I mean? The Super Bowl. They're called the Dallas Cheerleaders, isn't it?
Cowgirls.
Yeah, women as objects. So you take all of these things, and then in one tremendous afternoon, you symbolize them all in this great liturgical event. You know, and why does the nation just go crazy over this Sunday? You know, because it's so important to be involved in that. By being involved in it, you incorporate yourself into these symbols. I don't know, am I overstating this? Or do you see the... Okay. Any questions? Okay. Then I noticed, have you ever been out driving during the Super Bowl, if you're not watching? There's nobody on the streets. You know, it's amazing. Well, the church has a Super Bowl. We have the weekly Eucharist, but then we also have... I'm supposed to be on chart 4. The church has a weekly Eucharist where every week we tell the story, and then in the bread and wine broken and poured and shared, we paint a picture of the story and then incorporate ourselves into the story. The church always also has an annual incorporation of its people into the death and resurrection of Christ. We've almost lost the meaning of this because Easter has become a cultural springtime festival. And most cultures have called Easter the Pasch. I was going to ask Ricky if that's in German.
No, it's French.
It's French. It's also Spanish. Easter is a Pasch in Spanish. I don't know if you know any other languages. But that word means the Passover. And I'll share a little of what Easter means. And then only by understanding what Easter means can we understand the meaning of Lent, because Lent is a preparation for Easter. The pictures down here are for a more detailed explanation that I'm going to come for tonight. But two ways that the church has most often done Holy Week and Easter, I should add Easter to this. One, this has been more true of Roman Catholics, is that Holy Week and Good Friday and then Easter, we have a funeral for Jesus. And on Good Friday, Jesus dies. We bury Jesus, and then on Saturday, there is no Jesus. And then on Easter Sunday is the resurrection, and Jesus comes to life. And I don't know if some of you grew up in Roman Catholic traditions, but our next-door neighbors in Albuquerque said that on Saturday before Easter, they got to go to the church and run and shout and run around inside of the church because Jesus was dead, so then it was just a building for that one day. Is that familiar to anybody? Now, we've done this too. At the beginning of my ministry, my Good Friday service was a funeral for Jesus. He would be dead by the end of my Good Friday service. And I had people that had planned like to go out for dinner after the service, and they come back later and say, "You ruined our dinner." And then Protestants have done the same with Easter, you know, even to the absurd point of the pastor stepping out of a coffin on Easter Sunday. I don't know if you've ever seen that one. To represent that now Jesus is coming to life again. In other words, it was like going to a movie. You know, on Good Friday you'd see Jesus die, and on Easter Sunday you'd see Jesus come to life. Okay, the more common Protestant way of doing Holy Week, Good Friday, and Easter is its story is time to only tell the story. So on Good Friday we go and hear the story about Jesus' death. And then on Easter, we go and hear the story about the resurrection. Or often, as John said, on Good Friday, we hear he failed. and on Easter we come and celebrate it wasn't so bad after all. That often has just been the words about Good Friday and Easter. Okay, what the most ancient understanding of what happens at Easter time, and again I'll say to try to get this, and then I think we can get Lent, is Passover means to make passage, and it means to make passage with Christ. And as Jesus died and rose again, when we were baptized, we died and we rose again. Each day we die and we rise with Christ. But then at this one time of the year, we symbolize that in the most fantastic way we can, with the richest colors, the richest language, the richest pictures. The idea that we paint those symbols so clearly that after our Lenten preparation, on Good Friday and then the Easter Vigil, when we renew our baptismal death, we actually ritually then experience again our death for our sharing the death of Christ. And then after the baptism renewal, which we will do here on Saturday night before Easter, then we come forth again as Easter people to the new life in Christ. This was most clear to me when there was a series on, I always say Channel 5 because that's what it was in Albuquerque, educational TV, and it was The Religions of the World. Do you remember that series? It was called what?
The Long Journey.
Yeah, was it The Long Journey? Do you remember who the moderator was?
An Australian.
But I remember he was deeply impressed with being in Romania at Easter time. Does anybody remember that? And in a very kind of remote village in Romania where they're Eastern Orthodox, early on Easter, he went to the church, and here the entire town was lined up, going up to the altar in the little church. And everyone, children, elderly people, the oldest person, anyone, they were all would walk up, get down on their knees, crawl under this little altar table, come out the other side, and come out smiling. And he decided, well, certainly this is just something they go through every year, and none of these, quote, peasants would know what they're doing. So he went down the street and asked an old man, an old farmer, and this man just looked at him like, what is wrong with you? At Easter, he says, we die with Christ. And we go into the tomb with Christ, and we are risen with Christ. I remember in the series how just deeply he was impressed that these people had a symbol of what the Christian faith was all about. And with their bodies and with their flesh, they painted the symbol, and by doing it in faith, remember always in faith, without faith, liturgy is dead. Without faith, ritual is dead. But in faith, that experience of crawling under the altar was they're again renewing their baptism, and they're dying with Christ and being raised with Christ. Well, what is Lent? I don't know, what were some of the things? Oh, I was going to come back to you, John. If you could see, when I meant actors and actresses, I meant more that were pain. Artists might be a better word, if that's uncomfortable, that in liturgy we're painting a picture and then we're entering into the picture we paint and becoming part of it. Are you more comfortable?
Yes.
Okay. What are some common experiences of Lent? Just, what were several? I saw a hand.
Gina.
Oh, Gina.
No.
Oh, you're
walking. Wednesday night service.
Yeah, going to Wednesday night service. One more service. Was it a positive or a negative?
They were usually not too inspiring.
Did anybody give up anything? Or land or not?
Tried to. About a week.
You failed? I don't have a lot of memory of Lent because I... Oh, do you have one?
One year, Mom, every Wednesday night, made some kind of fall-tasting rice pudding with prunes in it. That's the only tried once.
That was your suffering?
Suffering.
I don't have a lot of memory of Lent because I grew up in a church that didn't put a lot of emphasis on the liturgical calendar. I just remember the altar was purple at that time.
I was raised up in the Catholic Church, and I do remember them covering the statues with purple cloth at Lent, and I never understood why they did that.
Oh, yeah. It was a symbol of solemnity or that, I guess.
Why purple? Isn't purple sort of the royal color?
Yeah, I think it's also a color of suffering. Am I right?
Repentance.
Yeah.
My experience maybe is kind of giving something up, not something really important that you'd miss, but it was never quite clear to me the meaning behind that. I guess as a kid it was vaguely associated with guilt, like you, most of the time you're enjoying life too much. And
to put a little damper on.
Right, you gotta give something up as a way of saying I'm sorry for having such a good time, there's so much deeper in the moment. Or so, I don't know, it was very, very vague, but it was...
Did a lot of us have kind of a somewhat of an attachment to guilt? You're at least supposed to have a little more guilt.
Yeah.
You know,
little. In my church, the windows were covered with heavy purple draperies, so the whole sanctuary was dark. Mm-hmm. And then during Holy Week, the bells were not rung for anything, and instead they had big wooden rattles that were... I liked it. I thought it was very
dramatic. We've tended as Protestants to only paint our pictures of the story with words. You know, and what we're really talking about in liturgy is painting it with words and pictures and sound and music, even smells. Okay.
Oh, well, in our group we kind of discussed that Lent was a time that it was very somber and very quiet and kind of like very depressing, but also this part of giving up something. In our family, me and my brother were big sugar fans. Well, we had to give up sugar on our cereal every morning. Not only did we have to give up something, we also had to take on an extra task. We had this huge shepherd, you know, German shepherd. I always had to walk the dog, which I thought was just horrible because she walked me.
So it was both a negative and a positive. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try now to, and everything I'm trying to do now will stand or fall on whether or not I can say this. And that is to try to show the relationship of Lent now as the church really gives us the gift of 40 days to prepare for Easter. And if our Easter ritual is to picture in a more intense way than any other time during the year that to live the Christian life is to die with Christ and be raised with Christ to new life, now we have 40 days to prepare for that experience on that coming Saturday night, Sunday. We have 40 days to prepare for that experience of dying. And Lent comes from the early Christian church where all the baptismal candidates were baptized on Easter Eve. It was very unlikely that you would be baptized at any other time than on Easter Eve. And it was the reason, again, the meaning of Easter was to die with Christ and to be raised with Christ. So it was a significant time for a person's one water baptismal death and rising. To the baptismal candidates, the church gave the gift of Lent, and during that time, the focus was entirely on What do we die to and what are we raised to? What in my life needs dying and what in my life needs resurrection? When I go to renew my baptism on Easter Eve, and part of that renewal will be to renounce the devil and all his works and all his ways, we've had 40 days for each of us to think about what in our lives and even in our community, Lent is both individual and communal, what is to be drowned. And into this then fits the Lenten disciplines, the discipline of prayer, the discipline of in contemplation, in almost you might say mystical contemplation, placing myself more and more and more in the mind of Jesus. And the more I am in the mind of Jesus, then the more Jesus tells me what in my life and in our life needs to die and what needs to be raised. Or the discipline of fasting, even the discipline of giving up something can fit in if it's a reminder to us that on Easter Eve we again die. If we adopt some discipline of a little death, or if we adopt, as the church through centuries has done, a discipline of a good work. Not that I'm going to be so good at it, but then I teach myself what the Easter resurrection will be for me. But in the deepest way, I'd say again, it's any way during Lent that in a more intense way we can enter into the very life and mind and will of Christ. And then we'll be ready for Easter and ready for that greatest ritual and greatest liturgy in the church year. Now in a few moments we will enter into the ritual or the liturgy of Ash Wednesday. Again, it's a doorway now to the church's gift of time to prepare for the Easter passage. There'll be two symbols in the service tonight. We'll begin the service with confession, and you'll notice there will not be an absolution tonight. That doesn't mean that God doesn't forgive, but it's a reminder that the worship service that we begin tonight now will go on for weeks. And we might have forgotten by the time it comes, but the absolution for tonight's confession will happen on Maundy Thursday. That's a little side point, so if you forget that, it's fine. The symbol, the first symbol tonight will be ashes. And those of you who wish to participate in the symbol, can, at the time I'll announce, we'll have three stations where the three pillows are. And just come and kneel, and one of us will just put the cross on your forehead in ashes, and we'll say these words. Remember you are dust, and to dust you will return. Now, why has the church from ancient times said these words? And it relates very closely to what Eric said last night about humor.